Well, a headline in a newspaper in Japan reads that the whole world is watching the election of the superpower. The Obama-Romney debates and the elections in the U.S. have particularly fascinated the Japanese, who are not used to direct personal attacks in politics. Today, we want to take a look at how the world is watching election season in the U.S. Russian coverage has gone from indifference to recognizing after the last debate that the stakes are high for U.S.-Russia relations. The Chinese have been preoccupied with their own secretive, once-in-a-decade transfer of power. But in Brazil, there's been shock over Mitt Romney's comments that he's going to defund Big Bird, Sesame Street, very popular there. Today, we're going to narrow our focus to the Arab world. Our next guest has been following how Arab media has been covering this election. He writes in Tablet magazine, "It's sharply different from the way U.S. elections were covered in the recent region until recently." Joseph Browdy is a Middle East specialist. He has a weekly Arabic commentary on a Moroccan radio network. Joseph, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks, Robin.
So how is it different?
Well, for years, the mostly government-backed Arab media claimed that American politics is basically a dog and pony show, that there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats, and the presidential elections are fixed by Jews. But that's changing in the era of satellite TV and Twitter, and Arab publics increasingly believe that there's a real difference between the two parties and that no one interest controls the electoral outcome.
Give us an example of how you see that.
You see it in, first of all, dedicated coverage on Al Jazeera, which has been showing a weekly program on the American elections. They ran the debate in full with an overdub of a simultaneous translator. And thousands of young people in the Arab world tweeted live the debates. And almost all of them seemed to recognize that there were serious differences between the two candidates, especially when it comes to foreign policy.
Well, give us some examples of tweets that show that there's an understanding of distinctions.
I followed a Saudi tweeter named Khalid Al-Anazi. He's a volunteer for the Saudi Red Crescent. He's got more than 16,000 followers. And he likes Romney because he thinks that Romney is more likely to arm the Syrian rebels, and he's sympathetic to them. But by contrast, you've got a Libyan tweeter, Mohammed Al-Boussifi. He's a Photoshop designer in Tripoli, and he likes Obama. A lot of Libyans appreciate Obama because they feel that he helped them liberate their country.
So what do you think is driving this change that you're seeing?
Well, I think that it's certainly the opening up of Arab media from government-controlled media to semi-independent media, and now the beginnings of commercial media. And so people have choices of what to watch. So they're more likely to be able to see those minute, nitty-gritty details and make up their own minds about what's going on. Another thing is that, you know, it's human nature to project your own reality onto foreign environments. So if you live under tyranny, you're more easily going to see America as being anti-democratic too. But when you've liberated your country, overthrown a dictator, and you have elections yourself, then you can see and more interestingly follow the elections that are happening elsewhere.
As you also point out, many Arab journalists have come to follow the election here. It's a State Department program. Tell us about that.
The State Department understands that if you bring Arab journalists here, and other opinion leaders for that matter, give them a chance to see how the electoral process works, they're going to understand it better, and they're going to share and clarify what's going on here for their audiences back home. And so the State Department flies in and puts up Arab journalists, Arab professors, and many others, gives them a chance to see the conventions up close, to watch how campaigns are funded. And it seems to be a very successful program. So, for example, there's a guy, Abdullah Khalifa al-Shaiji, and he's in the Jordanian newspaper Al-Dastur. He wrote a two-parter on the presidential elections that basically walks the reader through domestic American politics, the economy, the foreign policy debate, and even what's going on in the swing states and where they're tilting.
This is something you say that you're observing, but we were looking at the comments, the responses to your article. Some people, you know, say that maybe you're looking through rose-colored glasses. Here's D. Sarna, who says, "I know the author meant well and wants to be fair and balanced, but the piece comes across as naive and full of wishful thinking. For instance, you had comments from Al-Watan, that was a Bahrainian paper, and this reader says, you just had mistranslations on their English language website, which is meant to influence the gullible, maybe meaning you. So tell us about that Al-Watan article. What did it say? And what do you think about that, the thinking that you are just, you know, wishful thinking about how the Arab media is viewing the U.S.?
It's not wishful thinking. First of all, I don't mince words about the fact that there's a great deal of anti-American media and all kinds of elements are stoking it. But my research is based on Arabic language reading. The article is by Obaidli Obaidli. And what he's saying is that Arabs have tools to influence the American elections themselves. They have economic power. They have holdings in the American economy. And they even have influence by virtue of hosting American military bases. So he's saying, hey, let's get together and coordinate a strategy to influence outcomes the way we want.
That's a columnist taking a very American tack, saying, let's become part of the political process the way Jewish pressure groups are, as opposed to a violent tack. Again, the criticism from one reader that that's wishful thinking. But here's another following up to that. And Jacob Arnon says, wishful thinking, read this. And he directs us to an article in ArabNews.com by an Arab writer who questions the Arab world and their relations with Israel. He writes, the questions now are, what was the real cost of wars with Israel to the Arab world and its people? And the harder question that no Arab national wants to ask is, what was the real cost for not recognizing Israel? And why didn't the Arab states spend their assets on education, healthcare, and the infrastructures instead of wars? He said, I decided to write this article after I saw pictures of a starving child in Yemen, a burned souk in Syria, you know, the underdeveloped Sinai in Egypt, car bombs in Iraq, and the destroyed buildings in Libya. He says the common thing is that the atrocities aren't done by an outsider. The starvation, the killings, the destruction in these Arab countries are done by the same hands that are supposed to protect and build these countries. This is an Arab writer really taking on Arab countries. How unusual is that?
Although it is unusual, he does represent a minority view among Arab opinion writers, certainly in the Arabic press. It does speak to the diversity of Arab thought, and it also shows he feels comfortable enough to write this and say it to the public and not fear retribution.
Should he fear retribution? I mean, where does this fall?
He's a minority voice. You have minority voices today. Their numbers might grow tomorrow. And on a personal note, as a Jewish American who now does a broadcast every week in an Arab country, that's something that wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. But you see that today. I venture to say you're going to see more of it over the next few years.
Well, let's right now take a look at some more of the tweets that came out after the foreign policy debate this week. Shadi Hamid says the issue of the U.S. leading versus leading from behind is real and shouldn't be dismissed. Real doubts about U.S. resolve and staying power in the Arab world. Although here's a tweet from Shaima, who studies the U.S. She's a Qatari. She says, Romney really wants to talk about America's record in peaceful history? It's followed by about 10 question marks. We're talking about the view of U.S. politics, and especially this week's debate, with author and Middle East specialist Joseph Browdy. He sees changes in the way the Arab world is covering U.S. elections in the region. More with him in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation about how the U.S. election is being seen in the Arab world with Middle East specialist Joseph Browdy. He says there's a big change in the way Arab journalists are covering this election. In the past, there was the party line that the U.S. election was a sham, Republicans and Democrats the same, Jews controlling everything. This time around, Browdy says Arab news outlets are covering the election in a nuanced way, talking about how Arabs can influence it. And Arabs are looking inward. Just before the break, we were talking about a Saudi columnist saying it's about time the Arab world faced up to Arab problems made by Arabs and faced up to the real cost of the choice Arab nations make when they decide not to recognize Israel. But Joseph Browdy, how is that type of writing combined with the fact that Arabs are now getting real news and coverage about Israel, Europe, and the U.S.? How's that changing the way opinions are being formed in the Middle East?
In the same way that watching Arab media from numerous different interests and countries, commercial media in Arabic coming from the West. Sky TV just started a broadcast in Arabic. Israel has had its own broadcasting in Arabic going back decades. When you're treated to so many different perspectives, there's a growing chance that you're going to form original opinions yourself. And I would venture to say that that writer in the Saudi newspaper does have an audience. And traveling in Saudi Arabia, I can tell you that he has many people who share his views.
So you're seeing that there's this more nuanced look at U.S. elections, that it has to do largely with the Arab Spring, with new media that's not state-controlled. But you say that even as Arab media was saying that Jews controlled U.S. elections, Arab elites knew that wasn't true. And they knew, in fact, that they could have some more influence on the elections.
So you have this sort of hypocrisy. You have the Muslim Brotherhood working through some of its affiliates in the United States to influence the elections in swing states, even as they told their own supporters in the Middle East that there is no hope for Arabs to affect electoral outcomes.
How is the Muslim Brotherhood doing that?
Pro-Muslim Brotherhood organizations in the United States, some of them still exist, others folded since then, got out the vote. They worked through mosques, they worked through their own media, and at that time they were urging people to vote for George W. Bush, probably because of sort of revulsion at the idea of having a Jewish vice president. Naturally, many of those people came to regret their support for Bush, in some cases from behind bars over the years that followed.
Because George Bush declared war in Iraq and...
If we're talking about Brotherhood and its sympathizers, they opposed the invasion of Iraq. Yeah. They didn't like the tone of Bush's rhetoric with respect to Islamic issues. And the term Islamofascism, which Bush emphasized, was seen as something that was targeting the Islamist groups.
Well, how else do you think that this new view of what the Arab media could be that you see, how it's going to resonate in the region? If more and more leaders in the Arab world see the nuance in American elections, how will they try to impact them?
Well, there's a history of leaders in the Gulf trying and perhaps succeeding in impacting U.S. elections. So, for example, Saudis have a historic and very open friendship with the Bush family. It goes back to the days when George H.W. Bush helped liberate Kuwait. And so in 2004, they take credit for having helped George W. Bush by lowering the price of oil in the weeks before the election. Bob Woodward reported it. People may have mixed feelings about that, but the fact is they're interested in doing it. And you have a larger number of people who want to try. I don't know whether they're going to succeed, but what I think is that their interest, their concern, their preoccupation with our elections is an opportunity to expand our dialogue with this part of the world.
Well, and we should say, in response to the Woodward reporting, the Saudi ambassador said that the lowering of prices and the talk about oil prices at that time was nothing that the Saudis wouldn't have done for any president. So they're, of course, backpedaling from the idea that they did this for George W. Bush. We're talking about the Arab media interacting with the U.S., but there are other players in the region that also might try to influence the media.
The Russian government is responsible for some of the more anti-American material you see in the Arab media. They're arguing that the two parties here are two sides of the same coin, and they have their own Arabic language network. Iranian government, which also has its own Arabic TV network, is making similar arguments and stoking anti-Americanism in the Arab world.
What are you hearing from the Arab media when it comes to the discussion of Afghanistan and Iraq and the two wars, especially in light of the debate in which Mitt Romney, who was seen as, you know, wanting troops to stay longer in Afghanistan earlier in the campaign, now is saying that he's on the same page as Barack Obama. Do they pick up those shifts, those different shifts in the debates?
Well, for one thing, a lot of writers and broadcasters in the Arab world are viscerally opposed to the drone strikes that have become commonplace. They feel that the drones often hit civilians. I interviewed a Brotherhood leader in Jordan, Rahail Haraiba, who expressed a lot of satisfaction that Obama was withdrawing troops from Iraq and planning to do the same in Afghanistan for reasons that have to do with the Brotherhood's agenda in those countries. On the other hand, there are people people in Iraq who feel that the U.S. left them behind, not militarily but politically in terms of supporting civil society in Iraq, and other things that Iraqis feel are badly needed. I did notice on tweets after the third debate a number of tweeters out of Iraq warming to every pronouncement in favor of soft power, the idea of reaching out to the Muslim world, reaching out to Arabs in need of civil society development, and offering that kind of support.
Well, and that might come as a surprise to some of Mitt Romney's conservative backers here in the U.S., but he was making some of those overtures.
And those were the moments when hundreds of tweets expressed support for Romney.
That's Middle East specialist Joseph Browdy. We'll link you to his article, Obama versus Romney in Arabic. It's in Tablet magazine. And by the way, his latest book is The Honored Dead, A Story of Friendship, Murder, and the Search for Truth in the Arab World. Joseph also has a weekly Arabic commentary on the Moroccan radio network, really plugged in. Joseph, thanks so much.
Sure, Robin. Thank you.
Okay, still to come today, that explosive story over the late BBC TV star charged with pedophilia. We'll speak with a current BBC star raising uncomfortable questions about that scandal. It is quite something. And it's after the news, here and now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Os Gemeos, colorful dynamic paintings by Brazil's most renowned street artists, on view now, icaboston.org.